On this episode of the Soccer Nomad podcast, I'm joined by Jay, who is the resident blogger at designfootball.com. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Austin.
So you can follow Jay on Twitter at J29ERS and at designfootball. So Design Football features user-submitted designs of kits and crests, some of which are quite amazing. Why don't you tell the listeners about the site and how it came about?
Okay, so in the mid-noughties, the idea of kit designs and there being a huge community to be an interest in kit designs really came to the fore. So there was a website called, and still is, called footballshirtculture.com, and that featured the official kit launches for all the big teams, and then grew and grew and grew, so it had smaller teams on there as well, and then started also including kit leaks. So before the kits were released, it would include if people had seen part of the shirt, or if there had been a sort of clandestinely taken photograph of a shirt before it was released, it would appear on there, and that became quite popular. Also on that website was a fantasy kit design section, and that became very popular as well. So members of the website or visitors to the website could go on there and upload kit designs, and then other people would comment on them and talk about them, and this would get talked about on forums as well. And sometimes these designs would get shared around the internet, even in those early days before social media had really hit. A lot of people talk about them and think that they were real designs. So that was an interesting thing. So as an offshoot of Football Shirt Culture, in 2008, designfootball.com was set up, which was for that purpose. As you outlined yourself, it was entirely for sometimes kit design news. So if there'd been a new logo or something related, new stadium designs, that kind of thing. So everything but the shirts, there would be news stories on designfootball.com about that. But the main purpose was to set up a community of people who would like to design kits of their own, to say we can actually do better than the professional designers in theory. And people would look at these designs and comment on them and discuss them and share them. As things like Facebook and Twitter started kicking in, those designs would then be shared over the internet.
Yeah, when I was getting ready for this, I started searching teams, and really, I would dare say that no matter what team you follow, somebody on the site has designed a new crest or kit for the team, and it's really quite extraordinary.
There isn't a massive, massive range. The dangerous thing is if you search for certain bigger teams on the website, you will get hundreds of designs that will appear. So the Manchester United and Liverpool's, there were very many kits that have been uploaded to the website. And then even the smaller teams, smaller Polish teams, South American teams, amateur teams as well. So something that has happened is there's a competition section of the website, and a lot of the time amateur football clubs would say, well, we have the option of designing our own crest to put on our new kit, or even sometimes we have the option of submitting to our manufacturers a new kit design that they will then make up, but we don't know how to design a football kit, so we'll go to the website and we'll offer a prize of the new kit once it's made up. So a huge range of football team kits on designfootball.com now. Yeah, enormous.
Yeah, so Design Football, I think it's fair to say, is part of a family of blogs. Is that an accurate way to describe that?
Yeah, as I mentioned, the main one is footballshirtculture.com, which still features the kit release stories. There's also Viral Football, which encompasses the little ads, little video adverts for kit releases, so promos for a new boot or a new shirt that will come out, some Nike and Adidas and that kind of thing. So it's just brings them all into one place, so you can check those when they're released. There's also Football Fashion Boutique, which covers new releases of trainers, tracksuits, that kind of thing that is influenced by football in some way. And also Football Collectors Items, which is another website which includes things like match-worn shirts that have been sold at auction, or, for example, England caps that players have put up for auction in the big auction houses in London, for example. So it covers those kind of things as well on there. So the main one is still Football Shirt Culture, and then probably after that it's designfootball.com, but there are those other sites in the network as well.
Yeah, totally. I encourage listeners to check that out. So recently, you guys at Design Football started a podcast, which has been really interesting, especially for a kit nerd like me. Your first podcast, you looked at some of the Euro 2016 kits, and then episode two, you had a member who told a pretty interesting story how he transitioned from sort of just coming on the site and putting a design up to actually having it designed for a Scottish team. Why don't you talk about that real quick?
Yeah, the Martin Leroy came on the second of our podcasts, and he was actually he's always been a he's been a member of the web our website for a long time, and he's uploaded fantasy kits of various teams. What he was also doing was uploading these designs to a Kilmarnock FC forum. Kilmarnock is the football team he supports in Scotland, and at some stage they, I mean, it's covered in the podcast, but at some stage, they were moving manufacturers, and they were decided to manufacture their own kits, or certainly have a lot more control over the design of their own kits. And they actually contacted him based on the designs he had put on the website, on this fans forum, Kilmarnock fans forum. Contacted him and asked him if he'd like to get involved in the design of the new kit. So that was particularly interesting for him and for us. And it's yeah, it was definitely fun talking to him about it.
So I'm behind on episodes 3 and 4. What are the topics on those?
Yeah, episode three, I spoke to Dennis Hurley. Dennis Hurley is an Irish sports journalist, and he has a kind of an obsession with kit clashes. So when you see two teams turn out in kits that are a little bit too similar, and it's not easy to see whether their colours are distinct enough from each other. So that was an interesting chat with him. He's also he runs a website called PrideInTheJersey.com, which covers all the GAA, which is Gaelic Athletic Association kits, which is they play Gaelic football and hurling in Ireland, and they have the kits that they wear with that. So he has a website that lists all those designs going back decades. So that's a great website, and so we talked about that. That was good. The last podcast was like a summing up of what's gone on in 2015 and what we might see in the future in this year that we're in now. That was with Chris Oakley, who was the blogger, one of the two main bloggers on the Football Attic, which is a great football nostalgia website. Still exists, but they're not updating anymore. But it was great talking to him on the last podcast as well.
So staying on the sort of summing up 2015 and looking ahead to 2016, what are maybe two or three things that listeners should be looking for?
The main thing for 2016 certainly is technology. So for whatever reason, and this is one of the banes of my life, is that rugby seems to be ahead of football. Despite the lack of money in rugby compared with football, rugby is a big sport in this country, but certainly not on the same level as football. They seem to be further ahead in technology and and innovation in general. So 2016, what I'm hoping is that the technology increases in football shirts. And what I mean by that is things like GPS, Opta statistics being gathered based on technology that is in the football shirt that reads heart rate, effort levels, whatever else you can think of, the GPS and so on. So that would probably be the main thing in 2016. We haven't seen it before, and it's kind of long overdue. In 2015, the main thing we saw it at the back end of 2015 was probably, and it seems crazy to say this as a massive story, but Adidas moving the stripes from the shoulders and the sleeves to the side of the shirt. Now, I imagine this is only going to be a temporary thing, but we'll wait and see. The 2016 to 2017 kits are likely to all have the stripes down the side of the shirt, and then we'll see what happens after that. The main thing, again, from an English point of view, or certainly English-based point of view, is the New England kit will be coming out from Nike as well. So we were expecting something last year. They seem to have put off releases for both Brazil and England last year. So we'll see England kits, we'll see Brazil kits, France kits as well. So that's something to look forward to.
Okay. So listeners, they check out designfootball.com. They have a image in their mind about what they would like to see from their favorite team. How do they go about getting on the site and putting a concept together?
Okay, so the signing up process to designfootball.com is relatively straightforward, just as you would sign up to most websites that have sort of a login function. If you can't log into the website, then you need to set up an account. You set up an account, you get a confirmation email, you click on the link, and then you're set up on designfootball.com. Once you're signed up to the website, there will be a user panel section. From there, you have an option to upload designs. And when you upload a design, it will give you an option of which category you want to upload that design to. In terms of actually designing the kits, there are several kit tutorials on the internet. Well, more than several. There's several on designfootball.com, certainly. And if you just Google fantasy kit design or kit design tutorial, you'll get a fair amount of results, both from designfootball.com, from footballshirtculture.com most likely as well, but then from other sites too. And there's various techniques. The other option, of course, is to sign up to the website and just message someone. So there is an instant messaging system between members. You can always send a message to someone whose designs you've seen on the website and you admire. Just contact them, and most people will probably just get back to you and say, this is what I use. So, a lot of people use Photoshop. A lot of people use Illustrator. Those kinds of programs you can get you started in creating your own football kits.
Awesome. As I'm based in Atlanta, Georgia, there's a lot of talk about the new Atlanta United kit, and there's been several nice designs out there, mainly taking sort of an AC Milan sort of vertical red and black stripe look, and then adding some gold touches. So that seems to be the way that things are going. We're really excited to possibly see a gold, either away or third kit. So we're really interested to see what the first shirts are going to look like come March of 2017.
Yeah, the gold kits are they're usually received with a backlash. Now, I love them. I think it's a fantastic thing to do. Barcelona had one about 15 years ago, which I sort of real gold lame type of effect. So that was great. AC Milan had one a couple of years ago, which really, really didn't go down well.
Is that the one with the pocket?
Yeah, that did have a pocket on it. Yeah, but well, that's a great thing as well. I've got no problems with gold or pockets on football shirts, but maybe that's just me.
The last one I could really remember, it seems like Juventus had one maybe 10 years ago as an alternate shirt. But the gold, I think getting the color right of the gold will be critical, and then, like you said, if it will be received. All right, Jay was part of a project he referenced earlier, Football Addict. Football Addict put out the greatest football shirts ever. It was 50 shirts over a couple months, and they a lot of work went into this. They had an individual post for each shirt. They did a series of several podcasts. So Jay, John Devlin, and then Rich and Chris at Football Addict put all this together. I thought we'd just look at the top 10 real quick. May share your thoughts on those, and just sort of recap that for the listeners.
Yeah, for me, this is great because I didn't actually appear on the podcast, which included, I think, maybe 8 to 10 or 7 to 10. I can't really remember. We argued a lot, but I think we were mostly in agreement about the top 10, which is some of the inclusions. People would think, well, how did you include those? But for us, it was pretty unanimous, really. So the number 10 shirt was the England 82 shirt, and that was probably the one that we argued about the most. It's an Admiral shirt that England wore in the 1982 World Cup. At the time, it wasn't well received, but looking back on it, it's become incredibly iconic. Now, I think a lot of people listening will probably know which one I'm referring to, but it was white with blue and red stripes across the shoulders, with a little bit of trim on the V-neck collar and cuffs as well. Since then, it's had a life of its own, with retro designs referencing it from various manufacturers. People nodding to it when they probably don't have the intellectual property rights to actually reference it, but they do it anyway because it's become such an iconic design. The next one, number 9, was the Africa Unity shirt. Now, this is the one that everyone thinks we would have argued about, and they say, how did that possibly get in there? This is a shirt that was released in around 2009, somewhere around then anyway, by Puma. And it was designed as an away kit or a third kit for all the African teams that wore Puma. So it does what it says on the tin. It's to bring these African nations together in theory. And it is controversial. And people said, well, why do you have a blanket approach to various nations who have their own individual characteristics? But for us, it was just a great design. It was blue, and then it merged into sort of brown color further down, I think. But it was the gradient effect that was the most interesting, and that was something that we had seen in other shirts later. Barcelona very famously wore it maybe a year or two after that, about 3 or 4 years ago.
The tequila sunrise shirt.
It's been referred to as that, yeah. So, but this came after the Africa Unity shirt, and there probably have been others before then, but that one was really striking. It's also a very slim fitting shirt, which Puma were doing at the time.
I think the post on footballaddict.com really captures not only what the shirt, the aesthetics of the shirt, but what the shirt was trying to accomplish in terms of the brown being the amalgamation of all the different soils of Africa and that sort of. There's a real story behind the shirt, and I think if you once you read the post, you'll understand a little bit more about what the shirt was trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I think with stories like that, you have to meet them halfway. So the instant reaction to something like that is to say, well, this is just marketing from Puma. So we don't, you can say whatever you want to say, but really you're just trying to make money. So if you buy into it, then it's great. If you don't, then it's a problem, and it seems a little bit opportunistic maybe, and taking advantage of a situation. But yeah, I'm sort of halfway there on the marketing side of things, but the rest of it is just that it's a great shirt, and it was a clever shirt, and it was a brave shirt. It was an interesting idea, and it brought something new to the table. So that's what something I loved about it.
Okay.
After that, we had the Newcastle United shirt, which really defined an era. Adidas had this was 1995 Newcastle home shirt, and anyone who knows anything about English football, the 1995-96 season for Newcastle United is when they probably should have won the league. In the end, Manchester United won the double, but Newcastle United were ahead for a long, long period of the season. They were ahead by 12 points at one stage, and then they just blew it at the end. And this was Kevin Keegan's side playing wonderful, expansive football, attacking football with great players. The shirt was Adidas going back to what they did best. So they had the big bars on the shoulder for a few seasons, and then they moved these big bars to somewhere else. And this was when they stripped it back again and said, okay, we're just going to have slim Adidas stripes down the sleeves. We're going to have a very tailored look. We can have a grandad collar on the shirt. So the Liverpool away shirt on that season had a grandad collar as well. It's very popular. So that was a great shirt, and it also defined that season for Newcastle. Then Adidas again, the number seven shirt in our list was the 1984 European Championship shirt. Again, on the field, very successful. The team led by Michel Platini won the European Championships in Paris. This was a design that had huge influence over the next sort of 20 years, or 30 years. It was a blue shirt with and white bars across the front. It was a very iconic design. Then number six was the Juve shirt from the 1985 season. This is, it sort of defines that era for Italian shirts. So they had that sort of wool effect, the tight fitting stretch effect. Doesn't necessarily look like it's well manufactured, but for them somehow it worked. With the Ariston sponsor, I think that one has had as well, which is, people always think of Juve when they think of Ariston. Then the top five, Liverpool, the 85 to 87 shirt, they won the double in that shirt. It had a jacquard pattern. Such a massive contrast to the Juve shirt from the same period. So much more advanced in technology. So it had a jacquard pattern with the Adidas logo and the Liverbird in the background as part of the weave of the shirt. A classic Adidas shirt. Then the top four are probably the really iconic. Certainly numbers four, three, and one are the really iconic shirts that everyone will reference when they think back to great shirts through history. So number four was the Denmark 1986 World Cup shirt with thin stripes on one side and thicker stripes, I think, or what block on one side and thin stripes on the other, red and white, by Hummel. That's a shirt that everyone looks back to. There's a book by a Guardian journalist called Danish Dynamite, which is about that side from that World Cup. And on the cover, it's got this shirt design because it was such an iconic design that everyone remembers that team for how they played on the pitch because they were fantastic. But also the shirt they wore was massively memorable. For the same reason, the Netherlands shirt from the 1988 European Championships, great team. Everyone remembers Van Basten's goal in the final, but also everyone remembers the geometric or isometric pattern shirt, which was probably controversial at the time in the Netherlands, but for everyone else, it just was a particularly striking shirt. The second shirt that we picked, so number two, was probably something that surprised people, but it was when Umbro stripped everything back in 2009, so did away with all the flourishes and created a very, very tailored, thoughtful shirt with a neat sort of polo shirt collar. So that was when tailoring came in. They branded themselves as Tailored by Umbro, something like that. But the England shirt in 2009 set those things in motion. And really, the influence that shirt had for all the manufacturers, possibly with the exception of Puma, but certainly Nike took things on board, or they took Umbro on board. And their shirts were very, very simple after that. Simple, no unnecessary embellishment. And that was brought in by that England shirt by Umbro in 2009. Then the number one shirt, which, as I haven't mentioned it yet, you can probably guess what it is, which is the West Germany shirt, which they wore in 1988 to little fanfare. But then in 1991, they won the World Cup. It was a very famous shirt with a ribbon sort of band effect on the front, which Adidas still uses to this day on leisure wear of various styles. I think most people probably know which one I'm referring to, with the German flag colouring on that band as well.
Yeah, all these are on the footballaddict.blogspot.com, and I'll put this in the show notes. As you guys were going through the top 50, a lot of these shirts I was not familiar with, so that was kind of exciting. You know, you did spend some time on the USA 94 shirts. I think those were in the 30s, if I remember correctly. But when you get to the top 10, I think you mentioned the word iconic and impact. And I think that you guys really referenced the 1984 French shirt a lot. I mean, that was like a common thread. The West German shirt that you mentioned, that sort of, you know, those ribbons, those diamonds, you know, there's permutations that came out of that, and, you know, how that impacted, and how, you know, the Holland 88 shirt, And the Danish shirt, like you mentioned. For me, when I was reviewing the Newcastle one, for me, that's when I started following the game and following in England. And, you know, that year, you know, as a Manchester United fan, I can, you know, remember seeing, you know, the Kevin Keegan meltdown and how great Newcastle were in that shirt. I love everything about that shirt. The collar, because I have a Spain, I think Euro 96 one with that sort of collar and buttons, and I love that. And it, like you said, it captures an era, which is, I think, either by accident or by design, is what some of the great shirts do.
Yeah, we try to, as much as possible, we try to avoid placing shirts in the list because of either influence or them being iconic. But as I've run through them all, that those words have come up over and over, because you can't avoid it. That the shirts that have the biggest impact on you will end up being the iconic ones. So we wanted to just look at it from an aesthetics point of view, but with hindsight, it's so difficult because you have the impact of that shirt, the way it was, the matches it was worn in, the style of the team that wore that shirt as well. So yeah, it's troubled us that maybe we haven't been able to be as objective as we'd like, but you can't deny that the impact that the kits have on you through the way they are used as well.
One thing I noticed about the list is the lack of Brazil shirts. Was there something that you guys talked about, or is it because it's almost so iconic that there's nothing they can really do, or how did you guys address that?
We did talk about it. I don't think a single Brazil shirt was put forward by any of us. So the way we went about it was each of us put forward anything up to 40 or 50 shirts ourselves. And then we came together, and so we had anything up to 200 shirts. And then we started whittling them down. And there was a voting process. And then we had power of veto over some of them in certain stages, I think. No one put forward a Brazil shirt. And then afterwards, we looked at it. And in the process, we looked at it and said, well, we haven't got a Brazil shirt in there. Is this a problem? And then no one could actually come up with a Brazil shirt that we actually thought was a great design. So that's when we go back to this iconic thing. The idea of Brazil wearing a yellow shirt, blue shorts, and white socks is incredibly iconic, but they've never actually done it to a stage, to an extent that we've said that is the Brazil shirt for the Brazil kit, other than the 1970, other than 1970 version, which again is just iconic. It's not necessarily a great design. You love that design because of what they did in it, and you've seen so many photos of it because they're holding aloft the World Cup trophy, but it never made us look at it and go, the designer's done really well there, or we would have liked that kit if they'd gone out in the first round. So that's where we drew the line and said, no, we're not going to put teams a kit in because we have to put a kit in with those colours.
Okay, that sounds about right. I mean, I was when I noticed that there were no Brazil kits, I started looking back at the, I started looking back, like, is there a shirt out there that captures Brazil? And I think you, I mean, like the 1970, I want to say it was like yellow with a green ring collar, and then just basically blue shorts and white socks. And they've had some interesting designs. For me, the best one I could come up with is they had a 2011 version with which was yellow with sort of a green bar across the chest that sort of grabbed me. But other than that, it's like the one in 2002 when they won the World Cup was that sort of weird Nike template with all the angles that didn't, it's interesting, but is it the absolute best they ever had? I don't think so.
Yeah, the only one I really like that I can think of is the one that they had in around the year 2000. So it's one that you can sort of Google. I think they probably wore it in a Copa America or something. But that was a very, very understated shirt. And it was something that was going on with a lot of kits around that time. So the England shirt was very classy, round neck collar, round cuffs on the sleeves. Yeah, so a thick elasticated cuff on the sleeve, I think, again. That was the best one, but I remember the crest being too small on that one. So that was spoilt on that. As you say, the 2002 one, I wasn't particularly a fan of that. It even iconic status, he hasn't even managed that particularly, despite that being Brazil's last World Cup win. There was no arguing about that, certainly. None of us actually said, well, we've got to have a Brazil shirt in, because the answer would have immediately come, which Brazil kit do you want in there? And which Brazil shirt, sorry, we should make that distinction. Which Brazil shirt do you want in there? And there wouldn't have been an answer forthcoming.
Right. Going back to France, for me, you guys mentioned 1984 a lot. For me, Euro 2000 is that's my favorite one. That's the one I have. That's the one I'm wearing right now. That's the one for me that just gets it absolutely right. And then for, I like the Holland jerseys that use the orange with the black trim. Those really do it for me. And when I was kind of looking around, I've always been drawn to the Soviet Union kit from the like 60s. It's just red with CCCP across it. Just very simple. And I've always been drawn to that. So it's just interesting all the different sort of eras and countries and clubs you guys cover. And I hope people can understand how much work went into this. You guys spent some time on the first podcast you did with Football Addict, unpacking all the work that you did. And I mean, even the posts themselves, there's a design, there's links, there's text. It really was a labor of love. And kit nerds should definitely check out footballaddict.blogspot.com for this top 50 recap and all the great stuff on that website.
One of the things that, and thanks for that, but one of the things that, which is satisfying for me, but that maybe is an issue that I have, is that we got a lot of abuse from South America. We included a Boca Juniors shirt, and we didn't include a River Plate shirt. The Boca Juniors shirt was the furthest extent we went to in terms of including an iconic design. So it's the blue with the gold band across the middle. And we picked the best shirt that we could think of that design. And suddenly we were being told that the Boca would, and it was just getting caught in the crossfire between Boca fans and River Plate fans. So really, we could have avoided it by maybe including a River Plate shirt. Maybe we should have included a shirt with a sash. That's something I think about sometimes. But the most comments we got on the Football Attic was basically from fans arguing in Spanish about the fact that we'd included this Boca shirt when really no Boca shirt should have been in there. It should have been a River Plate shirt and so forth. So that was quite entertaining for me. But again, it was a sign of how far the list had actually spread in terms of people reading the posts and being interested in what was going on. So that was quite satisfying.
Awesome. Well, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking some time. It's the middle of afternoon where you are. You're based in England, and I just really appreciate you taking some time. Where can people find you again on Twitter, on the website, and that sort of thing?
So if people want to speak to me, I'm J29ers on Twitter, so JAY29ERS. And the website is designfootball.com. We're on Facebook, designfootball.com also, and on Twitter, which is designfootball. So easy to find, and it'd be great to chat. And hopefully people will visit the website, sign up to the website, and upload designs as well. That'd be great to see.
Absolutely. So I'm gonna put all this in the show notes, but definitely check out the website, check out the podcast, check out some really interesting designs, get involved, and put something up yourself at designfootball.com. So Jay, I just want to thank you again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks very much, Austin.
All right.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Soccer Nomad podcast. Let me know what you think by commenting on the Podomatic page or giving the show a review and rating on iTunes. And help me spread the word by sharing this podcast with a fellow soccer fan. You can follow me on Twitter at AustinLong1974 and please visit my blog soccernomad.wordpress.com for posts on kits, memories, and more. Thanks again.